The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Chaos has erupted in Belfast after a sickening attack. A man in his 40s was pinned down in the streets before being stabbed in his eyes, his back, his face. A 30-year-old man from Sudan has been arrested and charged. And this attack is as horrific as it gets, and it has sparked so much anger in Northern Ireland. Protesters are taking to the streets and rioters have been getting out of control. There are reports of people wearing masks, roaming the streets and setting cars and homes on fire.
On the outskirts of North Belfast, several hundred people gathered at the Clockfern roundabout. After the speeches, 200 masked men broke away and marched into the White Abbey estate. The group then made its way along this road and stopped at this property here on Abbeville Street. They proceeded to stone every window in the property and threw wheelie bins through the bottom windows. I spoke to a woman across the road. She said that the complex had been used to house asylum seekers and immigrants. She said that the whole ordeal of watching people come down this road and attack the house was terrifying. Off Belfast Newtownards Road, it was a glider bus that was targeted, set on fire. Crowds gathered as smoke billowed across the east of the city. A few hundred metres away, two cars were set alight on McMaster Street. When it was not cars or buses, they chose burning bins to block the streets. On the Crumlin Road, more bins and more fires. Back at the Clockfern roundabout, the crowds returned. Two burning cars now made the road impassable.
A city so long divided by violence, now it's Belfast united. Catholics and Protestants on the streets together, protesting against immigration. A bus set alight and a crowd of 100 men setting fire to homes of suspected refugees.
Last night's attempted murder will leave people feeling enraged with emotions from fear to anger. But please let the police do their job.
The knifeman arrived in Belfast 3 years ago and claimed asylum. He was given leave to stay for 5 years. The case seized on by Reform UK leader Nigel Farage.
What happened last night on the streets of Belfast? Barbaric, horrific in every way. We know that the man was of Sudanese origin, and I very much doubt whether this man should have been in Britain at all.
Far-right protesters hit the streets in central London.
Send them home! Send them home!
The attacker has been charged with attempted murder, the victim in hospital with serious eye and head wounds.
At this stage, we have no information to suggest that this was a terrorist-related incident.
The police are calling for calm, but whipping up emotions, Irish cage-fighting superstar Conor McGregor calling for the military to now raid homes and remove all illegal immigrants.
Meanwhile, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is calling for calm, saying there is no justification for the violence and disorder that we saw threatening our communities, nor for those who encourage it online or elsewhere.
Interesting that it says this is bringing Catholics and Protestants together long before the radical left just opened the floodgates to illegal immigration. You had all this, you had basically a religious civil war in Northern Ireland, in Belfast. So much hatred, the IRA sponsoring killings, kidnappings, terrorism. And here we see all of these prophecies converging together. Who would have ever thought that after decades of violence and fighting, British people fighting themselves? I mean, that's happening still to an extent, because you've got the radical left siding with the beheaders. But just letting that go for a moment, here are Catholics and Protestants coming together. The daughters are coming home. Why? because of unrestricted illegal immigration, just inviting in radical Islam. Catholic Europe is uniting. Catholic Europe is on the rise. This is, and the daughters are coming home, as I say. This is the religious resurgence, as I've been saying, that we need to watch most closely. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at our website, thetrumpet.com, or at the YouTube channel or the Rumble channel. If you go to the Rumble channel, make sure you give us the likes and leave a nice comment if you choose. We're living in the time of the judges. My father's written about that four-century period covered in the Old Testament. It was a bloody time. So much violence. Every man, as it says at the end of that book, doing what seemed right in his own eyes. And this is where we are today. The proverb says, there is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. There's a lot of commentary. Some of it's quite good. And then contrasting it with the way the radical left defended the mayhem, the bloodshed, the looting, the burning, just 6 years ago, less than six. We've got a montage later. We'll remind you of this. Lots of decent commentary, yes. But in all of it, what, no matter what side you're looking at, where is God? Where is God's perspective? It's easy to blame this just looking at the incident. And again, we're barely a few days removed from the publicity surrounding the Novak case in Britain. And now you've got the near beheading, the guy's eye. Was gouged out with that knife, his face slashed, his neck cut. The attacker couldn't get the knife quite through the bone. Just appalling evil and violence on camera. And no wonder so many people in Northern Ireland are outraged, taking to the streets, carrying out some burning and looting and some vandalism. And now the radical left, suddenly they're for law and order. But where is God in all of this? They're celebrating Pride Month in Belfast. Belfast, by the way, has a long, proud tradition of celebrating LGBTQ. It's going on right now. How does this factor in to what we're seeing play out on the television screens? How about going a little bit deeper into the subject of our sins, cause and effect? There's always a cause. And the commentary, most of it, is just talking about how citizens are fed up with illegal immigration. And they should be. They should be. But you've got to go deeper. All of this just shows how utterly unteachable man has been. You see these violent atrocities, and you think it would drive us to our knees. We'd drop to our knees and offer up humble supplications and petitions to God. But no, that's not part of the storyline. That's not even discussed. Here, this near beheading took place while Israel celebrates Pride Month. This is from one website advertising that. Belfast is home to the largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender festival in Ireland. And the city has a thriving LGBTQI community and gay scene. I think I briefly mentioned the fact that following October 7th, I guess they suspended some of these celebrations for a bit in Israel, but it's back on this month in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem. It's in Belfast. It's everywhere. Celebrating sodomy. And here again, where is God? What does God think? What's God's view? Does God have a position on this? So many of these prophecies unfolding, intersecting, converging together. God is trying to get our attention. He's trying to wake us up. He's trying to get us to turn from our wicked ways. The fact that we would even allow radical Islamists to come in and get on welfare in our countries and behead people and rape people. That in itself shows just how deeply immersed we are into lives of sin. It's all around us. If you look into the book of Judges, by the way, the Civil War was sparked by this terrible act of violence. And it's easy to just look at like the radical leftist commentators or Keir Starmer or whoever it is and say, okay, listen, calm down. Calm down. It's just one isolated event with Novak. And then next week, the near beheading. Well, calm down, calm down. It's just one isolated. We cannot tolerate looting. Well, in some cases, it is an isolated event. But even still, God points to that and says, I hope you learn some lessons. What are the big takeaways here? If you look in the book of Judges, Judges 19 through 21 is pretty much about this one event, gruesome, grotesque, violent, sexually explicit. And it was just one concubine that was sodomized and abused and raped, left for dead. My father says in the former prophets booklet, chapters 19 through 21 have probably the most depraved and tragic stories in Judges. It begins by, again, emphasizing the government problem plaguing the nation. The fact that they weren't submitted to God and His government. They weren't obeying God's law and His commandments. That's what led up to this disgusting, sickening event. And it plays out, as I say, over a couple chapters. Judges 19:1 says, and it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel, that there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. So he was looking for a place to stay, this man. And my father writes in the form of prophets, an old man invited them into his home. Then a gang of homosexual thugs came and demanded that the old man turn his male guest over to them so that they could sexually abuse him. He refused, but the mob finally took the traveling man's concubine and they abused her until she died. Just sickening. Appalling. And yet, you could look at it on the surface and say, well, it's just an isolated event. I mean, it's just one woman that was abused and killed and murdered. So why is this so significant? Why does God give this so much coverage in the book of Judges? God made sure this shameful incident was recorded and canonized in the Bible as an indictment of the horrifying state of Israel at that time. God expects us to zoom in on one horrific incident because it illustrates what's wrong with us as a whole. We've often talked about heading into that Judges 21-25 period, every man just doing what seems right in his own eyes. We're there. We're there. Declaring our sin as Sodom, and then all these violent atrocities just happening every day, every other day, every week. God's trying to get our attention. It says, to make matters worse, Judges 20 shows that the nation was so divided that they could not even agree on how to deal with the vile atrocity. That's today. That's what's happening today. Here you had someone that was nearly beheaded on Monday night, and you see the violent division between the two sides. And you know, just knowing this history, having a bit of common sense, understanding Bible prophecy, you know where this is headed. This is headed to civil war. Look at this case here in the States. It doesn't involve illegal immigration. But you've got that young Texas man, a high schooler, Carmelo Anthony. He insists on sitting in the opposition bench or tent. He wouldn't move. This white kid, I think Metcalf is his name, tried to get him to move. The black kid said, "Don't touch me. Don't you dare touch me." The white kid touched him, and the black kid stabbed him in the heart, and he died, the white guy. And now you have so many in the black community that are up in arms after this black kid committed murder. And there's one black mom, I saw the clip yesterday, she said, "What do I tell my 5 sons?" Well, how about if you start with, don't murder someone? We are cooked as a society. Judges 19 to 21 shows it. And just looking at the reaction and the divide, the beheading or near beheading, it's bringing together Catholics and Protestants, but that's not going to take away the division between Catholic Europe and radical Islam. We know what that's building toward. That's building toward Daniel 11 and verse 40. Sobering times. They should be. My father says they couldn't agree on how to deal with this vile atrocity in Judges 20. A civil war that killed more than 60,000 people followed. A bloody history indeed. This is where we are. We're in the period of the judges. And God saw fit in Judges 19 to 21 to record quite a lot of detail about just one terrible act of violence. There's another one, Bristol, I think, in the UK. From the Daily Mail, it says a teenage girl was repeatedly raped by 4 Afghan nationals after being groomed on Snapchat, lured to a house and plied with vodka and cigarettes, a court has heard. Mehrab Safi, 21, and then the other two perpetrators, including a 16-year-old boy, are accused of attacking a 17-year-old girl at the property in Bristol in November last year. Here's another one, just now making headlines, just like Novak's case from December. And the British people are outraged. What has happened? They're blaming it all on illegal immigration. That's a big problem. There's no getting around that. But it goes deeper. How is this girl, for one, how is she lured through Snapchat? Where's her father? Where's the family? Where's the government? Where are the guidelines? Where are the boundaries with social media or anything for that matter? To travel to another city to meet up with this guy, and then she finds out, oh, there's 3 other guys here ready to rape me. Bristol Crown Court heard how several days before the attack, the girl had been Christmas shopping with a friend in the city's Cabot Circus shopping center when they began talking to Safi. He allegedly groomed the girl on Snapchat and asked for nude images. 2 days later, in the early hours of November 30, he arranged for a taxi to pick her up from her home in Somerset and take her to an industrial estate in Bristol. So I assume she sent the nude photos. Why not? That's just what we do. I mean, I've been watching Euphoria. That's the society we live in. This is the society of OnlyFans. So she gets into the taxi and she heads off to a strange city or an unknown city where this guy's waiting for her. She met Safi and Habikel, was taken to the property, provided with cigarettes and vodka, and allegedly raped by Safi and his co-defendants. And this lawyer in the before the jury said on, well, I don't even need to read all the details, but you know, you need to read some of it. Because you read what's in Judges 19, it is not a pleasant picture by any means. And yet God used that one incident to try to teach Israel, ancient Israel, a lesson, to warn them. But as my father wrote, they were so deeply divided on the issue that it led to civil war. History's repeating itself. We're living in the period of the judges. Every man's just out there doing what seems right in his own eyes. For this terrorist, to hear the law enforcement officials say, we're not so sure this is an act of terrorism. When the Muslim from Sudan comes in and starts cutting the eye out of a victim and then trying to saw his neck, it's just, it's unbelievable. And then he's there on his knees, gleefully shouting to the neighbors while he's trying to behead this individual. Back to the former prophets. The overarching point of the book of Judges is repeated for emphasis. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. God inspired that statement to be repeated over and over, and he concludes the book with it. Have we learned the lesson from the book of Judges? All these quotes are taken, by the way, from this book on the screen, former prophets. And as to the Civil War, I'll just point you to other booklets by my father. You've got the Ezekiel booklet, and you've got the Isaiah booklet. You think of Isaiah 1 and verse 7. You think of Ezekiel 3, 4, and 5. I guess chapters 4 and 5 in particular. These seemingly isolated incidents or acts of terrorism or riots burning, the divide on both sides of the nation, it's building. You can see it with the Anthony case in Texas. You saw it with Novak last week in the UK, and then now here we are in Belfast. And of course, coinciding with all of this, you've got a celebration. We're proud of sodomy. We're proud of LGBTQ rights. We love it. We declare it. The editorial team that put some of the material on that Euphoria segment we had last week talked about, I think it was 1 in 40 Americans saw the season finale of that show on HBO. The show that celebrates rape, transgenderism, overdosing on drugs, murder, mafia, violence. It's all there. And you know who it's aimed at in particular? Young people. Children. And the creator of that show? Yeah, I just kind of took my own life and put it on the silver screen or on the TV screen. And it just shows how there's a lost generation. No, actually, it shows how perverted we are. That's what it shows. That's what it demonstrates. It shows that there's a sickness from head to toe, and there's no soundness in Israel. I often say the whole world is watching. Says, this was the kind of government Israel descended into after Joshua died. Anarchy. Anarchy. After a certain point, nobody really cared what the leaders were doing. Everyone just did his own thing. And my father says, does that sound familiar? Everyone's just doing their own thing. They don't care what the government says. I showed you the clip yesterday after the ball game. All this mayhem on the streets of New York City and the police officers just standing there watching it like they're at a boxing match or something. Like they paid good money for front row seats. My father says, remember, the book of Judges is a book of prophecy. You can find Israel on earth today by understanding this verse. That's right. We often talk about the many blessings that God poured upon the British Empire and then the United States of America. But the curses also reveal our identity. You can see us, we're living judges again. There's a duality to Bible prophecy. History is repeating itself. We haven't learned the lessons from Judges 19 to 21. Where is God amid all of these violent atrocities, all of this sickening activity? Where is God? It says, this is exactly the state of affairs in the modern nations of Israel. Everyone wants to do it his own way, whatever is right in his own eyes. That's a prophecy for today and the nations of Israel. People talk so much about freedom, but the freedom they cherish is really just the freedom to wreck their lives. They're so plagued by wretched sins. They hate law and government. Who can lead these people into anything constructive or profitable? It's an upside-down world. And here again, the illegal immigration, the radical Islamization of our nations, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You dig a little bit deeper, and this gal from Somerset, 17 years old, really? And she's getting into a taxi that some stranger from Bristol sent? Some stranger, she never met him. And then I guess he shows up with a friend. There's two guys all of a sudden. And she's like, sure, let's go to the apartment. And then she goes to the apartment. And there's two more guys. At what point do you stop the madness? Then you dig a little bit deeper. Where's the family? Where's the father? Who knows? Hey, Dad, there's a taxi here from some strange man in Bristol. So I'm going to be gone for the evening. See you later. What? That's where we are. That's Judges 19. Coming back to Belfast, you saw it in the cold open. Masked rioters in Belfast targeted the homes of migrants on Tuesday night after the Sudanese asylum seeker was charged with attempted murder over a sickening knife attack. Protesters set fire to homes, a Middle Eastern supermarket, and several vehicles, including a bus and a police car, after ignoring calls for calm. Footage of the disorder shows infants being carried out of neighboring houses as flames engulf the properties. A pastor told the BBC that people were being forced out of their homes because they're black. I mean, this is racist. This is racism. The response. The rioting in response to the near beheading. As I say, there has been some decent commentary about British governments betraying their own people, complicit in these appalling crimes. Listen to this one from Talk TV, clip 3.
Morning, Jez. On my way to work, as normal. Listening to you talk about the thing that happened in Belfast last night, all the unrest. Well, yes, rightly, you shouldn't condone what happened. What else have people got to do? They're not listening. The political class are not listening. These people who are coming over here illegally, they're rapists, terrorists. They're coming over here. It's literally like putting a wolf in a sheep field. You are giving them a target-rich environment. You haven't vetted them. You've done nothing. All you've done is dump them in a place where they can wreak havoc. Where they come from, guess what? There's no law. If they can do literally whatever they like. They come over here, there's lawyers, of course, taxpayer funded. They get a nice cushy home, running water, Sky TV, gym memberships, bus passes. They can literally go where they want and create havoc. And when they do, the people that foisted them upon us, guess what? They say, don't get upset. Don't do anything. Don't go out and cause unrest. Well, I'll tell you what, mate, stop reaping, then you might not have to sow it, because this country is absolutely on the edge. They cannot take much more of people getting stabbed, raped, blown up, you name it, you foisted it upon us for the last 25, 30 years, ever since Blair said, I'm going to rub your noses in it. Well, guess what? What goes round comes round. And I think the political class have got a very, very, very big smack on the nose coming.
But it is about time, my friend, that politicians realise that platitudes are no longer going to suffice, because we will see more of last night unless we see leadership and conviction and change, because I believe we've reached boiling point.
People are fed up. The tipping point has been reached.
What goes around comes around, the guy on the phone said earlier. You remember all those shows we had in 2020, the Summer of Love, when here in America, violent protesters were burning down cities, looting department stores, even murdering people, knocking them out cold in the streets? And then the reporters out in front of it with the footage of burning cities in the background saying, it's mostly peaceful. And, you know, there's some skirmishes here and there, but we got to do it. Well, as we were saying at the time, do these reporters even know how dangerous this kind of rhetoric is? Do they understand and realize that they're undermining law and order in the Constitution? They let the genie out of the bottle, didn't they? And now you've got the other side, represented by that angry guy on the phone. Okay, we'll stop burning and looting. How about if you stop raping first? Which side will prevail? Where is this leading? And are we learning? Are we really learning the lessons that God wants for us to learn from all of this? These are sobering times. We're living in the times of the judges. You can hear the anger, the division. It's so palpable in voices like what you just heard right there. And so both sides are digging in their heels, just like they did in Judges 20. Here's the flashback from the Summer of Love, 2020. This is clip two.
I want to be clear in how I characterize this. This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
That ain't a riot, what we're seeing right now in Minneapolis.
You know, Brooke, I think this is a march, really.
As they're coming off, it's peaceful. They're saying peaceful protest.
People are risking COVID to explain to this country that we're fed up.
Thank goodness for the looters, man.
Any reasonable person would say we shouldn't be destroying other people's property, but these are not reasonable times.
These people are fighting for their liberty.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there is unrest in our lives.
They're not going to stop. And this is a movement, I'm telling you. They're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day.
And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Just embarrassing. Utterly embarrassing. You lived through it. That was only 6 years ago. Where are those? You recognize many of those voices. What are they saying today? Well, we know what Keir Starmer is saying. He says that this is the Prime Minister of Britain. The scenes in Belfast last night were shocking and completely unacceptable. There's no justification for the violence and disorder that we saw threatening our communities. Kamala didn't say that in 2020. Oh, no. There's no justification for violence. Period. Full stop. It says here, it's clear that people were targeted last night because of their background, and I will not tolerate it. I'm pretty sure the Belfast resident and Novak last week or in December, I'm pretty sure that they were targeted as well for their background. Perhaps for their religious affiliation, because they were white. And so both sides dig in. It's building. We are headed for civil war, and it may be here sooner than you realize, sooner than you think. Because just look at all of these Judges 19 type incidents. These horrific atrocities. It's hard to stomach when you read Judges 19. It's the same today. Starmer says, I've spoken to Chief Constable of the Police Service in Northern Ireland to convey my thanks to them and the frontline emergency services for their bravery in keeping people safe. I've also spoken to the First Minister of Deputy First Minister to discuss the ongoing situation. Appealing for calm must be the priority, and that's what I urge now. Nothing in there about the Sudanese guy who took a knife to that man's throat, who gouged out his eyeball. Monday night, that's right, sickening, appalling crimes. Listen to this, another from Talk TV, clip 4.
And I'd just like to say to people, if you have been unfortunate enough to see the footage of this nutcase trying to decapitate this young man, I'll just say this to you. Watch him and the way he climbs around the young man. Watch how he holds him down like a well-trained mixed martial art fighter, keeping him in position so he can do his deed. That wasn't his first rodeo, mate. That wasn't the first time he'd been violent like that. He couldn't care less. He even took the beating he had off the fella who tried to stop him, and he carried on. Believe you me, the violence that these people can bring, not all of them, but too many of them, is a different level. And you saw that yesterday. He was like an old trained fighter, the way he went around his business. And a lot of people call them fighting age men, and that's what they are.
Sundance has a piece saying this: following a very public display of horrific violence, the Irish police are asking citizens not to protest against their beheading too strongly. You know, a quiet, peaceful protest, okay, but don't get too strong. You get too strong and then, well, you're racist. It says here, the police request follows a Sudanese migrant who was given asylum and then attacked a man on the street with a knife, slicing his face, neck, and back, gouging his eyes, and then attempting to use the kitchen knife to saw off the victim's head. Following video and attack of the attack becoming viral, the police are concerned that too many Irish people will protest against their beheading, and that could be disturbing to the sensitivity of unlawful migrants who may not support taking off the heads of the Irish people. Both sides, you see, digging in. How should we react to these kinds of violent atrocities? How should the ancient Israelites have reacted to Judges 19? They couldn't agree. They couldn't find common ground. A woman was repeatedly raped to death, and the people of Israel were fighting because of it. They both had their heels dug in, and they couldn't be further apart. Living the book of Judges, it always gets back to God's law and government, doesn't it? His judgments. And you think about God's purpose and plan. You think about the foundational bulwark to any stable, secure, lasting, peaceful society. The family foundation. Do you think about all of these perpetrators? I've given you a few examples today. And really, if we use Judges 19 as our guide, we only need one example. But there's plenty of them in today's society. And it shows just how upside down we are. It shows how much we've rejected God's law and his government. And it shows how much Satan the devil has destroyed that foundational bulwark that is the traditional family. Father, mother, well-adjusted, contented, happy, submissive, obedient children. It's gone. It's gone. And where does it leave us? It leaves us with Judges 21 and verse 25. Brendan O'Neill at Spiked. Pretty strong article. Suspect is Sudanese. The police tried to get the details out quickly, having learned how much it riles the public when the truth about barbaric violence is withheld from us on the grounds that we're too dumb and racist to handle it. It says here, yes, only the blood-stained degenerate bears responsibility for the horrors inflicted on that innocent man, but we now know the piece of scum had an army of witless aiders and abettors. There lurks in the background of this abomination a whole regime of complicity. The willfully oblivious technocrats who have overseen the withering of our borders, the spineless legal system that refuses to remove people who should not be here. This Sudanese guy, he comes in to Britain illegally in 2023. He goes through Dublin, I believe, and then up to Northern Ireland, settles in Belfast, and the British authorities, they know he's there. They give him a 5-year pass. Yeah, you can stay here till 2028. He's living the dream. The British authorities invited him in. And so, as Brendan O'Neill says, they're complicit. Root causes, but then it stops there, as I say. We're not going to go any deeper than that. We're certainly not going to bring God into the picture. But it really does expose the communist infiltration of our nations. It didn't go away when Jeroboam came back. Far from it. People are sick of paying the blood price of bourgeois virtue. That's increasingly how it feels to working class communities. They are expected to absorb the risk of letting in tens of thousands of unvetted men while their betters absorb the glow of righteousness that comes with crying, refugees welcome. You know, Kathy Hochul, hey, everybody's welcome. Sudanese, Somalis, listen, I don't think I'll have time to get to it. But when California revamped its voting system in 2018 with the help of Obama, the dear leader's wingman, Eric Holder, it was the illegal immigrants that they used as voters, quote unquote, for all of these Democrats. Not too long ago, we had the scandal in Minneapolis with all the Somalis taking in billions of dollars that the government provided, the left-wing government, the swamp. There's this other story here from JNS. Hostile states and groups affiliated with organized crime and terrorism received £28 billion of public funds through government loans and aid payments, according to an investigation from The Telegraph. This is in the UK. They're sending billions to terrorist groups. The report revealed a hidden government dossier showing that billions of pounds went to organized crime between 2015 and 2021. It says here the data disclosed vast misappropriation of public funds through foreign aid and COVID relief loans. We've got to fight COVID. We've got to give foreign aid. That's just who we are. We're making the world a better place. We're building a utopia. Come on. We're sending billions to Minneapolis to help people. It says, in fact, millions going to Russia or went to Russia and the Islamic State. Notably, more than $28 billion went to hostile entities in Britain between 2015 and 2021. The tail really and truly is at the head, and the head is now the tale. The communist infiltration was real. Herbert Armstrong warned about it for decades. It nearly blotted out even the name of Israel. God intervened to prevent that from happening. But what about the sickness? What about the cancer? What about the sins of Sodom? What about the sins of Judges 19? Have those been buried? Have we moved on from that? Now walking in newness of life? Hasn't happened. We haven't turned from our wicked ways. And so we're living in an upside-down world. Isaiah 5 and verse 20 says, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." The next verse is every bit as important. "Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight." You can't listen to a commentator and not detect, sorry for the double negative, and not detect the pride and the arrogance, the haughtiness, the high-mindedness. It's everywhere. Wise in our own eyes. Going back to this Brendan O'Neill piece, it says, this is why people are angry, not because they're racist, not because they want all non-whites cast out of the kingdom. It says such a defamatory classist bile doesn't wash anymore. No, it is the pathological nonchalance of the establishment that infuriates them, and the green light that such institutionalized cowardice gives to certain wicked men who come here. It says that image of the suspect in Belfast seeming to punch the air with blood-curdling delight as his exhausted victim fought for his life. This will be burned into people's minds. It deserves to become a defining image in the life of our nation. Well, I mean, looking at it in a godless society, why shouldn't it be? George Floyd is the defining image of the radical left. George Floyd, fentanyl Floyd, by the way, criminal Floyd, long list of criminal acts. That was the defining image for Kamala and company in 2020. That was the excuse. That was the excuse given as a pretext to burn the cities down. This is a war, they said in 2020. Government won't do anything, so we got to do this. One last bit here from O'Neill. He says, already the political class is fretting more about the masses' response to this apocalyptic event than the event itself. And that's true. You look at 200 masked men that throw rocks in windows and the wheelie bin. It's hard to take the BBC serious. In any event, the way they rush to denounce that, but not this, what you see right there on the screen. Do they love their country? Do they love their own people? Why would they do this? Why would the authorities in California invite in all these illegals so that they could use them to steal elections? What does it say about their love for America? What does it say about their obedience to the laws of the land? It's Isaiah 5 and verse 20. It says, an MP for Northern Ireland's Social Democratic Labour Party is fuming that the English right-wing politicians who might exploit this atrocity to further their own ends. Imagine witnessing such end times violence and thinking, how are people going to react? They are so lost. They are beyond lost. Imagine leaders in London or Northern Ireland, wherever, looking at this, what you see on the picture there, this murderer, this terrorist, gleeful as he works to chop this guy's head off. And the biggest concern for Israel's leaders, Israelite nation's leaders, is how is the public going to react? If I have time, let me just, I'll set this up quickly. Going back to the Novak case, there was a story, I forget which pub, the Sunday Times, it says here, Sundance reported on this. We know what the police did when they showed up at the scene. Southampton, I think it was. The guy that's bleeding out on the ground is handcuffed. And the murderer is there saying, yeah, it's his fault. He's a racist. He tried to pull my turban off. That was December. The footage is now out there. But as the Sunday Times reports, during the trial, law enforcement tried to intervene here again on behalf of the murderer, even after the facts were clear. Listen to this exchange from GB News, clip 7.
Breaking tonight, police at the center of the Henry Novak scandal reportedly tried to intervene during his killer's murder trial over fears about what people were saying online. According to the Sunday Times, the Hampshire police wanted to issue a public statement during the trial to combat what they called misinformation surrounding the case. But prosecutors warned the force, that doing so could risk jeopardising the integrity of the trial itself. The paper claims officers wanted to portray Henry Novak as the aggressor in official statements released after his death, despite having evidence proving this was not the case. Police doubting he'd ever been stabbed and now claims the force wanted to intervene in the middle of a murder trial while public anger exploded across Britain and America, that the police force were intending to release a public statement mid-trial but were then rebuffed by the Crown Prosecution Service. It is the police forces of this country so often that warn us against releasing information during trials at risk of influencing a trial mid-proceedings. This is extraordinary that the police would then intend to do that very same thing.
Yeah, the concern with me for the disinformation revelation this evening is that if the police are going to say that there is disinformation swirling around, you have to be able to trust them. And most certainly, they can't be releasing disinformation themselves.
I mean, it's a classic case, I'm afraid, of an institution trying to cover its backside because it knew that trouble's coming down the road. I mean, this isn't about disinformation. This is about them being poor from the very start. I disagree with Greg in the sense that, you know, he kind of frames it as a woke problem. This is just bad practice from the very start, you know, that allowed this young man to die without any effort to save his life, in fact, potentially, you know, hastening his death. And they were clearly trying to cover themselves.
The issue is the contrast between his reaction to this incident with Henry versus George Floyd, when he went down on the knee, and that was the other side of the world. It wasn't somebody that was English. It wasn't in the British Isles. And the outrage that happened from that and his comments there, it's the contrast, I think, that has set this off like a tinderbox in England. It's like the last straw.
So you've got the spread of radical Islam in the nations of Israel. You've got the corrupt leadership, the communist infiltrators. And here's a case, as this segment's bringing out, where law enforcement, which went in because of the woke training policies, sided with the terrorist straight away, the Sikh, with the knife, the 8-inch knife. And then even months later, in the midst of the trial, they tried to portray the victim as the aggressor. It is a tinderbox. It's a ticking time bomb. And we may be much closer to it exploding than we even realize. That's all we have time for on today's show. We appreciate you joining us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll see you again next time.